This is our Golden Black Saturday chat, and we're going to try it with Zoom, but also we'll be uploading this obviously to iTunes, and that may be where you're listening to it. Want to thank our sponsors here, and that of course is Sixth Street Dive, who actually is doing in-house dining right now and has started that earlier this week. East End Grill, still doing carryout. Scott Traskis and the great group down there. Purdue Federal Credit Union, they've been with us for years as sponsors. We're grateful for them. Follett's, Purdue Bookstores, too, have been with us. And, of course, First Source Bank, Charters Team, Remax, Ability Plus. And then also our folks that are still doing carryout in the area, Triple X. I know that Tom Deanhart I like to go down and meet down there. They are doing outdoor seating right now. Not the rest, indoor restaurant is not open, but you can go in and enjoy a meal there. They've been doing that curbside service. And of course, Arnie's and Bruno's still doing their carryout as well. Whitaker Inn had a great meal there last couple nights ago there in Lafayette. Smee's Place too in Indianapolis, Northside Indianapolis. Of course, all the Arnie's restaurants in Indianapolis. So Tom, this is the one that I've spent more time working on, and I'm probably have screwed up. But we're looking at the definition of unsung Purdue football players, the best ones. And by unsung, we defined it as what, Tom?
Well, guys, you couldn't have been first team All Big Ten or second team All Big Ten. You could have been honorable mention. So these were guys that obviously we think still had very good Purdue careers. May have not gotten the official accord from various outlets to recognize their skill set, but we think they're unsung Boilermakers who excelled at Purdue. And in a lot of instances, Alan also excelled on Sundays playing in the National Football League too.
All right, I'm going to let you start this, Tom, and your first pick. We're picking five, but if you've listened to the show the last couple of weeks, we pick our five and then we pick everybody else because it's really hard to eliminate this group. But, Tom, you're up first.
Well, first, Alan, going back to your injury, you made me really hungry, buddy. I need a little Dwayne Purvis All-American.
Yeah, I know. Kerry and Greg are working hard to get that going there at Triple X, but go ahead.
Al, I'm going to go with quarterback Scott Campbell. Going back, you know, Scott's his career overlapped with Mark Hermans and Jim Everts from Hershey, Pennsylvania. You're very well familiar with Scott Campbell, a prolific quarterback, threw for a lot of yards. 1981, 1982, 1983, Al, I believe he was a starting Boilermaker quarterback. Had a lot of big moments. A guy who did not get first-team All Big Ten honors ever or second-team, but went on to a pretty nice professional career with the Steelers and the Atlanta Falcons. And a guy even to this day, Alan, Purdue fans seem to have forgotten, but if you go back and look at his passing numbers, then they're even impressive today, almost, 40 years later.
Yeah, no question. Scott Campbell maligned some because you follow Mark Herman. And you follow, and his teams did not win. Now, Campbell actually got, as you know, got started in very difficult circumstances as Notre a true game. Freshman when against Notre Dame on national TV. Mark Herman has a hurt thumb, as I recall. Campbell starts that game in 80. That was really the only game he played a great deal in 80, obviously, as a true freshman. But, right, he was a starter after Mark Herman. Certainly one game that you've talked about, one of the great performances, Scott Campbell against Notre Dame, 1981. The two passes in a row to Steve Bryant and a long pass to Everett Pickens. It had bailed the Boilermakers out in a 15-14 win in 1981. Good pick there because Scott Campbell is in the cradle of quarterbacks. He was an outstanding pro, has done extremely well, still lives in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and is done well in real estate and a great guy. And has been definitely worthy on that list. I'll pick my first one. I'll go a little bit different and start with Mike Neal. And Mike Neal, obviously out of Maryville, Indiana, very talented guy, very unheralded recruit, as I recall from Joe Tiller's group. Got a chance to come down here, had some injury issues at Purdue, Played quite a bit as a defensive end or defensive lineman toward the end of his career and was very, very effective. He just, you know, whether he built, lived up to his billing in college, he was one of those guys that was a potential guy and got better as time went on and went on to play in the NFL for the Green Bay Packers. Had some controversy up there as well, but he was an NFL guy. And Mike Neal, really a good player at Purdue, and Purdue could use a Mike Neal or two, at least that skill level on its defensive line right now.
And that's a great choice. You know, Tiller brought a lot of good defensive linemen to West Lafayette, as you know, Alan, and Neal's a guy that sometimes gets lost when the roll call of those names is recited by Purdue fans, including myself. You're right. Nice choice. I'm going to go with the guy. Another 1980s Boilermaker. This guy actually still works. He works at Purdue University, Alan. Calvin Williams.
Yeah.
From Baltimore, Maryland. Boy, I tell you what, he was a bright spot on some bad Purdue teams in the late 1980s. I think he was at Purdue from about 85 to 89, I want to say. And, again, was productive in West Lafayette, and Alan – went on to the NFL where he was probably even better, maybe a fifth or a sixth round pick of the Eagles. I remember watching him in the early 90s for the Eagles with Randall Cunningham throwing him passes. Fred Barnett was a wide receiver opposite him. And again, Mike Quick and some good Eagles teams as well. So, you know, Calvin was a guy, despite his numbers, probably didn't get the recognition while he was at Purdue. Again, was not first team All Big Ten, was not second team All Big Ten. But still, it was a guy, I think, pretty much hasn't had a lot of great wide receivers in its history, Alan, you know that. And I think you can make a case for Calvin being maybe among the top 10 or so Purdue's probably ever produced. And a guy, like I said, who served Purdue well even up to this day, a good guy and an exceptional football player for Purdue and in the National Football League.
Right, truly one of those guys that got better or got more because it was the scorched earth of Purdue passing offense from a lot of the time that Calvin was here. He redshirted in 85, like you talked about, played in 86 as a redshirt freshman with Jeff George, scored a key touchdown in that bucket upset of Indiana when Scott Schultz blocked the kick in the 86 game in the famous Rod Woodson gold jersey game. Yes. But Calvin was a very, very productive receiver. 86 through 89 just didn't have. Now, Eric Hunter in 80, when Eric Hunter arrived in his first couple starts, I believe in the 88 season against Michigan State and Michigan, threw for a bunch of yards. Calvin Williams had very productive games, a huge game, as I recall, up in the Big House, I believe in 88, when Purdue threw for a bunch of yards and kind of made a rally. But you're right, great pick there because Calvin was a very talented receiver, and it proved out from Baltimore, Maryland, I believe,
yep.
And a guy that had a chance to prove his worth in the NFL. And I think he played long enough. We have to ask Calvin, played long enough in the league, 5 years to earn a pension. And he's been a longtime administrator under Morgan Burke and Mike Babinski, sport administrator at Purdue. Good pick there. I'm going to go with another receiver, and if you're in, this will ring true. Isaac Jones, 1998, he had 83 catches. And now, again, Drew Brees is throwing it around the yard a lot in that year, to say the least. But Isaac Jones will forever be in Purdue lore just for the catch against Kansas State, the 24-yarder from Drew Brees in the last the midnight catch, as I think of, because it was a late-night game and at the Alamo Bowl against number 4 Kansas State. Purdue wins that game because Isaac Jones and Drew Brees hooked up on that key play. But Isaac Jones had a lot of great catches that year, was a very good receiver, and he makes my list.
Good choice, yeah. I think he was a Pennsylvania kid.
Yep.
And like you said, an underrated target during the Brees era. Al, I'm going to stay in the 1980s, buddy. Sounds like a Jeopardy category.
Yeah.
Underrated 1980s Purdue football players, please. I'm going to go with Ray Wallace.
Yeah.
North Central High School, Indianapolis, Indiana. A parade All-American, a huge recruit. Boy, Leon Burnett. You can say all you want about this dubious Xing and owing, but you would agree, Alan, I think the guy could recruit. He was a great salesman. He got a lot of good players in West Lafayette, a lot of good skill players, I should say, especially. Ray Wallace was among them. Of course, Ray, as you know, came to West Lafayette as a defensive back. I think he played free safety. He started right away in 1982.
Right away.
right away. They plugged him in back there and spoke to Ray in this last year for one of the catching ups, and he's doing real well. He lives in suburban Nashville, works in property management, has a family, and he's doing well. He's happy and healthy. And he was a guy, you know, he was never really a feature back at Purdue. As you guys know, the listeners know, you know, Alan, that Jim Everett offense that Ray Wallace played in when he made the move to offense was pass oriented. And Ray probably would rush for 500 yards, caught a lot of passes, not as many as Rodney Carter, but he and Rodney Carter formed a nice backfield combination there. Bruce King, of course, the fullback, was in that backfield too for a while. Think about that. Three NFL running backs, probably on that 1985 and 84 teams. Think about that. And in the third round, a quarterback pick number three in the draft. But anyway, I digress. Ray Wallace, underrated back, nice NFL career with the Steelers and the Houston Oilers. Didn't get his just due, I think, at Purdue. I think because the offense muted his numbers to a degree. But a guy, you probably would agree, Alan, has to be one of the more talented players the school's had the last 50 years.
And he did have a couple of 100-plus yard rushing games. I think Indiana in the bucket game in 85, he had a big day there. But he was a very capable running back. And at North Central High School, he was probably the top player in the state of Indiana. A year older than Rod Woodson, right? Purdue got under Leon Burnett, got the two best players in the state. Of course, Rod Woodson is an NFL Hall of Famer. But I think Ray is definitely – and Ray's a great guy. I'll digress to one story. I was his residence hall counselor at Wiley Hall. Ray was on my floor. Him and Tim Richardson, who was also a very good running back, I believe out of the Chicago area, didn't make it at Purdue and transferred. Both Tim and Ray, they behaved themselves for the most part. I didn't have to write them up, but I also had Mac, I believe it was Herb Robinson and Mac Gaddis and John Askew all on my floor as well. Somehow they loaded them up for me, and I had some fun stories. But Ray, I got to know a little bit. Ray's a great guy. Can't find a better person to represent himself, his family, and Purdue. But he is truly been a very talented guy. I'm going to pick another running back here, and I'm in Jason Taylor. And Jason was a transfer, I want to say, and I should know this more. I believe he transferred to Purdue in the late days of Joe Tiller and played also under Danny Hope. Had a catastrophic knee injury, I believe, between his junior and senior year. Came back and played. But he was an all-purpose guy, you know, in the days of Corey Sheets. Corey Sheets, you know, might be another one. Did we miss Corey Sheets? Did he make for second team All Big Ten?
Yeah, I have to check and see.
May have omitted Corey Sheets, but certainly Jason Taylor, an all-purpose guy, really good special teams guy, a good running back, had a couple hundred-plus yard days, could catch the ball out of it, you know, and also just a really quality individual, good leader on those teams that weren't necessarily great, but Jason Taylor makes my list. And I think that maybe we're missing Corey Sheets because I'm not sure. Corey, I'll have to look that up. I'm not sure that Corey Sheets ever made first team All Big Ten or second team All Big Ten. But anyway, again, we're going to miss some people. But if we keep talking long enough,
I think he's the last Boiler 1,000-yard rusher, Alan.
Correct.
And, going back almost 10 years now, if not more than 10 years.
Yeah, so he's our first asterisk guy because Corey Sheets did not make second team All Big Ten, if I'm reading this correctly, or first team All Big Ten. And, of course, it's one thing that was tougher in those days, Tom, as we've talked about, is the fact that, you know, the Big Ten expanded. You know, you went from 10 to 14 teams now, a lot harder to make first and second team All Big Ten. But Corey Sheets is the first, at least my first major omission. So go ahead.
A lot of good football players don't get those accolades because, like you said, Alan, a lot of teams and few spots to be had in those postseason honoree squads. I'm going to go defense with this pick, Alan. 1990s, late 90s, Bethalto, Illinois' own Joe Odom. About a 6 foot tall linebacker, but Alan, he could run, he could hit, and he was an NFL player for about 5 years. The Chicago Bears picked him. And think back, Alan, I always lament Purdue's inability to put together a real quality linebacking core for the last 10, 15 years. You go back to those linebackers Tiller had in the early 2000s, NFL players front to back, Nico Koutavidis, Gilbert Gardner, Landon Johnson, Stanford Kegler, Joe Odom. I mean, they were all NFL players, and that's one reason why Brock Speck had that defense he had in 2003. And Joe Odom was a big part of that. He was not first or second team All Big Ten ever. But again, this guy was a track star, and but he had the size of a football player, and he could hit. And he's a guy that I think was certainly underrated and one of the better linebackers, at least I've seen in the last 25 years or so in West Lafayette.
I remember Brock Speck talking about Joe Odom after he recruited him. I believe Brock loved him because he could, like you said, he could run. I can remember in a bad game against Illinois in 2001, Purdue gets ahead in that game. Illinois was a Big Ten champion team that year. Purdue gets beat badly, but Joe Odom, I believe, had a fake punt touchdown or a long run for a touchdown. Just showed how he could run. He was a very good high school running back, as I recall as well. But I do remember Brock Speck really talking him up and his speed and his ability. And it proved out for an opportunity to play in the league for a while. Joe Odom, and he had that linebacker look, you know, I think he, you know, had that hunched neck and everything else, but he could run after people. And I think that's an extremely good pick. I'm going to pick another guy kind of from that era, a little bit later, slightly later, and that's Brandon Villarreal. And that Brandon is a guy that's I hear from time to time, but a very good defensive lineman. Had a couple years starting in the trenches in 2004, 2005, but also was a key reserve on that very good, probably Purdue's best defense, to be honest, since the first Rose Bowl team. In the late 60s, you could argue maybe the junk defense in the 70s, but that 2003 defense had a lot of really good players on it. And Brandon Villarreal, somewhat unsung in there, very active at the defensive tackle spot, as I recall. Again, a two-year starter in 2004, 2005, an effort guy, a Texas guy that I think is worthy of making our list. You're up, Chief.
I got a name. You're familiar with all the names, Alan, but this is a guy in your wheelhouse from your late college years, early Purdue working years, Roosevelt Barnes.
Yeah.
I wonder, Alan, he came to Purdue and played basketball 4 years. He was okay, right? Nothing great. Right. He comes out for the football team in, I think, 1982. He also played baseball.
1981.
Yep. And – I mean, he made an immediate impact. To me, I look back, that was – thinking they had Roosevelt Barnes, David Fry, and Mark Brown. Now, only the true Boilermaker football cognoscente would know those three names. And all three guys played in the NFL. Three great linebackers, honestly, Alan. Roosevelt Barnes, 1 year, he goes on and plays with the Detroit Lions. He's a draft choice. And you wonder, this guy probably should have played football instead of basketball at Purdue. We wonder how he could have developed for 4 years as a football player. Of course, fans know him now for his work as a player rep, worked with Eugene Parker for years, the late Eugene Parker. Roosevelt Barnes, a great Boilermaker, one of the greatest athletes. Like I said, a three-sport letterman at Purdue. How many three-sport lettermen has Purdue had the last 50 years, Alan?
Yeah, and great, really talented baseball player that ended up not able to hit the curve, as we always talk about that. And Roosevelt is a guy that obviously also the father of Caleb Swanigan, and certainly got back into the Purdue family when Caleb was around. And the interesting thing about Rosie is that, I think he took advantage of that fifth year rule at the time, that you could play one sport, come back, and if you had a year and play 1 year of eligibility in football. And he certainly was a very good rush defensive end. He got put in by Jim Young in the last year and on that defense with Mike Hankowitz and company. And became very, very effective. And you're right, he ended up going to the Detroit Lions. One of the great stories about Roosevelt Barnes that he'll tell, you know, he and Isaiah Thomas had an unbelievable feud in the 1981 Purdue-Indiana basketball series. And he literally physically manhandled Isaiah. We talked with Isaiah's made all this all this notoriety because of Last Dance. And of course, Isaiah is in the Hall of Fame level, one of the great point guards in the history of the NBA. But he didn't. Rosie got under his skin, and Bob Knight used to show films of how Rosie was being too physical. And this is on the Bob Knight show, and it all developed into that 1981 Purdue mentality thing that Bob Knight did. Roosevelt Barnes was at the thick of that. But I always love this story that when Roosevelt Barnes was playing at the Pontiac Silverdome, both the Pistons and the Lions were practicing at the Pontiac Silverdome. And the first time that Roosevelt Barnes came up to Isaiah Thomas, because they were both practicing at that facility at the time, Isaiah kind of bristled and almost ran the other way, like he thought Roosevelt was going to punch him or something like that. Roosevelt, one of the toughest minded guys, very smart guy. His basketball career did not turn out like he would have liked it to. He did play under Gene Cady more in his last 2 years, never really started. And he was a Gene Cady type player in basketball, but he was a football guy playing basketball in a lot of ways.
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Wayne High School, right? And really, really good player.
Gene Parker, some great Boilermakers come out of that city over the years, as we all know.
All right, I'm going to go next, and I think if my count is right, are we on to our fifth pick? And this is Torrey Williams. And Torrey Williams, a defensive back, also out of Texas. And really, Torrey also is a guy that I think he overcame at least, I believe it was two, Brian Neubert would know this better than I, two catastrophic knee injuries. But he was a really solid player, and I can remember again when Purdue recruited Torrey out of Texas and Brock Spack and the defense talking about what a guy this guy would have been, a pro. A lot of people thought he had not had those injuries. I can remember the Purdue-Indiana State game 2006, Purdue wearing those throwback Rose Bowl commemorative jerseys, and Purdue's killing Indiana State late in the game. And on the sideline, Torrey Williams has an ACL injury that ruined him for that year. He came back. I believe he had another one, but he ended up playing. And he was a very, very effective player in the last years of Joe Tiller, and I believe the first years of Danny Hope. So that may have been a little stretch there, but I think Torrey, I look at him mostly on his great talent. Yeah. And maybe a more of a what could have been had he stayed healthy all throughout his career. But I also give him a lot of respect just for fighting through those injuries and getting a lot of playing time when people thought there was no way in heck he would ever play football again. Yeah. Did you, and now we pick five.
Those are five.
Now we get to go to the ones we missed, and I'll let you start.
Talked
about a number.
Yeah. You know, a few guys we discussed beforehand, another 1980s guy for me, Mark Turf Jackson. Oh, yeah. Terre Haute, Indiana. You'd want to talk about a guy who didn't make much of a ripple at all in West Lafayette. Was a senior on the 85 team, I believe. Steve Griffin was the go-to receiver that year. Rick Bruner was
Jackson good. Did very well.
He did. But yeah. You know, Griffin was the guy, right? I mean, my memory. And, of course, Mark Jackson goes on to great fame for making the touchdown catch on the drive for the Denver Broncos. Caught that John Elway bullet in the frigid Cleveland air in that AFC title game in the 1986 season. So Mark Jackson's a guy whose career never really blossomed at Purdue, but turned out to be a heck of a pro. You know, Daryl Stingley was never first team.
That's unbelievable.
Second team all Big Ten, of course. We all know about Daryl Stingley. Gary Danielson. You could speak more to Gary Danielson, maybe miscast as an option quarterback 1 year. He's a guy, of course, his NFL career speaks for itself. Raheem Mostert, we all got to know a lot more about Raheem. You wonder, what if with Raheem? What if, you know, they could have, Danny Hope could have maybe tapped in that skill set earlier and maybe featured him more. I think he came as a wide receiver, Alan, didn't move to running back till
later. And a return guy. I mean, he was such a prolific return guy out of Florida as well.
Yeah, him and Akeem Hunt. You know, football is a simple game, right? I mean, get the ball to your fastest guys in open space. And boy, you think you want to come up with ways to get the ball to Raheem Mostert 10 to 15 times a game if you could, but maybe it's easy for me to say. Chukwu Okorie, Lafayette Jeff's own, was a Jim Coletto recruit, big physical defensive lineman, played for the Colts and a few other teams in the NFL as well, Alan. He's one of the guys, again, part of that den of defensive ends, who often gets overlooked You're talking about Colvin, O'Keefer, you know, Anthony Spencer, Cliff Abril, and those guys. But Wakori was a real gem as well. So those are a few guys. Chris Dishman was another one, Alan. He had sort of a checkered Purdue career. It was much better as a pro than in college. And as a guy that at Purdue was – he got to Purdue in 1983 with Rod Woodson, Louisville, Kentucky, and never really put it all together. But again, the National Football League, he was outstanding. So those are a few guys that didn't get first team All Big Ten or second team All Big Ten. Still had nice Purdue careers. Maybe didn't fully blossom in West Lafayette. But in hindsight, looking at maybe what some of these guys did post Purdue, certainly maybe we didn't appreciate them while they were on campus.
Yeah, and a great, you know, it's hard to believe that Darryl Stingley, who was a first-round draft pick and one of the great, probably the best recruiting haul Purdue's ever had out of Chicago with Otis Armstrong and Darryl Stingley, recruited by Ron Meyer in Purdue's best recruiting class ever, 1969. That was the class to produce the nine first through third-round picks in the 1973 NFL draft. Purdue's never been close to that since. Three first-round picks, Darryl Stingley, Otis Armstrong, and Dave Butts, all in that first round. So, I think that's absolutely the case with it's hard to believe that he's not on there. And I think Raheem, again, hard to limit this list. You know, a couple other guys that really, you know, Curtis Painter. And I know Curtis Painter's a little bit like Scott Campbell in terms of his playing career, threw for a ton of yards. Threatened, I think, the Drew Brees record. And I should know this. I don't know, did he break it? But he was through for, you know, a four-year starter. Got injured in his senior year, and that kind of slowed his numbers down the stretch. But Curtis Painter certainly produced a lot. Purdue, you know, it was tough for him because he followed Kyle Orton, followed guys that Drew Brees on the heels of that, and he threw for a lot of yards. Purdue was a little bit on the downward slide under Joe Tiller to some extent. Slides, maybe not the right word, but the downward trend. And that was difficult, I think, for Curtis. DJ Knox is another guy that of recent that really made a lot of difference from an emotional standpoint in the 2017 turnaround year for Jeff Brohm. Mm-hmm. I think he's the guy that worthy of consideration. And Joey Elliott also in 2009 waited all those years for his chance to play. Came in and had a very good senior year in 2000. He sat behind Curtis Painter for most of that time and got the opportunity to become a full-time starter as a senior. I believe it was a fifth-year senior, as I recall. Had a great upset of Ohio State when he played a terrific game against Terrell Pryor and company. The Buckeyes were ranked seventh in the country. Purdue just 1-5 at that time, and they beat Ohio State in Ross-Ade Stadium. So, you know, again, we go on long enough. The guys that don't qualify, but I think were unsung players. Nick Hardwick was a second team All Big Ten guy. He was the all time unsung. Craig Terrell, he was an intern at Golden Black, so I'll always be always love Craig for that. But Craig was a great, very good pro, capable pro, yeah, but also a very good player. But he was second team All Big Ten along with Gilbert Gardner, who you'd mentioned before. So
I had on my list was John Reeves.
Yeah.
Was a huge recruit out of Florida. Had a really strange career at Purdue. You know, as a quarterback, I remember they brought him in against Penn State in a crazy game in Ross-Ade Stadium one year. Just didn't work out for him, a quarterback. Switched to defense. Ends up getting drafted, I believe, by the Chargers. Yeah. Plays in the league for 3 to 5 years. A tremendous athlete, a big physical specimen. And, again, a guy who you knew he could help your football team. It's a matter of finding a place where he could help you. And they finally did that.
Well, and John was a great story because of his illness. He had meningitis between, I think, 96 and 97, and almost died. And I can't remember which year, but it was maybe between Coletto and Tiller. I'm not 100% sure. But he then switched from quarterback, and Tiller made a living out of switching guys, some guys to offense, to defense, kind of like Jim Young did with Keena Turner from tight end to defensive to rush end. John Reeves moved to switch positions. Obviously the Matt Light has been well documented from tight end to offensive lineman, but yeah, John Reeves, a great pick, great guy. And a guy that had to overcome a lot from a physical standpoint to be a great, to be a good enough pro and be a very solid contributor. And again, I know we miss guys, and it's always good after these podcasts that we'll hear from people that, hey, did you think about so-and-so? Probably not, but we should have.
Generate conversation, right? Stir discussion.
It's a lot of fun to be able to do this. And we'll do this with basketball before long as well. You were right about last week's show. We should have divided that up in terms of our most surprising moments between football and basketball. But, we live and learn in this job. So that's a good thing after all this time. Well, Tom, thank you. I always enjoy this conversation. And I want to thank our sponsors. And, of course, that will be Follett's. The good folks have been with us ever since the start. We're in our 30th year at Golden Black, and Follett's has supported us from the get-go. Purdue Federal Credit Union, pretty much in the same boat. Sixth Street Dive, open for the dining now in restaurant dining, in addition to carryout. East End Grill, and of course they are doing just carryout only right now. First Source Bank, and they have been great supporters of us over the last several years. Charters Team Remaxability Plus, we always appreciate the work that Kyle Charters does for us on our Monday podcast. Of course, a Golden Black alum, and very, very good job on that. One of the great voices that we have the ability to be associated with, certainly. And also Home Field Apparel. And Home Field Apparel is vintage Purdue, and also vintage, their niche is vintage sportswear, using a lot of old logos. Connor Hitchcock and company do a great job. We're going to be working on some projects with them with some Golden Black merchandise upcoming as well. So have a great week, everybody. Thank you for indulging us for this recording. And if you watch this on Zoom, more power to you, my friends. But if you watch this while you're doing your gardening, while you're on iTunes, that is great as well. But we'll look forward to talking to you next week. And Tom, have a great week.
You too, buddy. Take care. Thanks for listening, everybody.